Boulder Tech Podcast is presented by Boulder Startup Week 2019 title sponsor, TechStars. At the core, TechStars is a company founded by entrepreneurs for entrepreneurs. With more than 300,000 alumni and 10,000 mentors across 150 countries, TechStars is a worldwide network that helps entrepreneurs succeed. To learn more, go to techstars.com. Welcome to the Boulder Tech Podcast. I'm your host, Joel Davis. Episode 43 of the Boulder Tech Podcast is part of a special Wild series of interviews recorded during the 10th annual Boulder Startup Week. Wild, or Women Inspiring Leadership Development, is a new track at Boulder Startup Week 2019 and features candid conversations celebrating women's startup success, diversity, power, mentoring muscle, and leadership impact. For the Wild series, I'm pleased to hand off interviewing duties to Stephanie Brady, Managing Director at IFG Studios and Board Member of the Wild Council. On today's episode, Stephanie chats with Shail Mehta, CEO and co-founder of The Last Game Board. They talk about how Shail started a tech venture without a tech background, her inspiration to fuse the physical game board experience into the digital gaming world, and battling the bro culture as a minority woman. All of that and more on this episode of the Boulder Tech Podcast.
Joel, our Wild team thanks you for your production expertise. In this episode of Wild, we are pleased to feature Shail Mehta, CEO and co-founder of The Last Game Board, a tech startup based in Denver. Shail just launched her venture back in April 2018 that is bringing the world's first board game console to the market based on a patented technology platform that combines digital and physical board game elements to provide a limitless gaming experience. Shail is a political science graduate of Colorado University and actually started her career in investor relations, energy, and financial consulting. Shail, welcome to our Wild podcast.
Thank you.
You're now a tech startup founder, but you don't have a tech background. So tell us how you're using these non-tech skills, these other disciplines, to help launch The Last Board Game.
I don't have a tech background. I graduated with political science, literally thinking I was going to take over the world, like through government and international affairs. And that's still a huge passion of mine. And I think that it always will be. It's something that's never going to change. But when I had this idea for a company, I think I put aside all technical expertise that I didn't have and try to find the people that could fulfill those backgrounds. And I think my degree, unfortunately, I don't use it. There's nothing about what I do today that uses this other than the ability to effectively communicate with people and like have that strong network that I built at CU Boulder, but that's kind of it.
Tell us a little bit about what The Last Game Board, why is it so unique?
So think about how you interact with a touchscreen, right? Any digital device for that matter. You are limited by your 10 fingers and the conductive energy that you pass through your 10 fingers. There is no way to integrate physical objects, so dice, cards, any plastic piece that you have onto a touchscreen device today. So when I came up with the idea for Game Board, I asked the question, why can't you integrate physical in the digital like that? Why are you limited? What are the limitations of the technology? Could we push it? And I went into a black hole of just researching scholarly articles of people way smarter than me who have tried to solve this problem. And I came across some really interesting theories. So I decided that the best way to do it was to find someone who could actually make this product. And I had this idea of how to get there, but someone to actually make and execute it was a completely different thing. So the integration and merging of the physical and digital has not been done before, and that's what we're doing.
I appreciate that you took on the challenge of asking and digging deeply into the question, why not?
Yeah,
why hasn't
not?
This been done?
Yeah. I think people have tried with like RFID tags, but all it does, it kind of unlocks something in your phone, right? Like you or NFC sensors or using Apple Pay or whatever. And I think there was a toy line, Infinity, that tried to come out kind of, you put a toy towards an app and it does something, it unlocks something. But that's kind of it. There was no way to interact. The device didn't actually read the game pieces, know what they were, track where they are, to pinpoint precision. I'm talking about millimeters. Right now, the tech with GPS, identification tracking technology, is inches, 2-3 inches. And when you're playing a board game, that's not possible. You need pinpoint precision. So that's what we set out to do. We had this creative problem trying to figure out, how do you make a digital, hardware device game, but incorporate physical pieces, which is the crux of board gameplay. And we tried to figure out, why is this not possible? And then we pushed the limits of what technology could do today to solve that problem. But I just had the problem, and I needed to find the right people to help me solve it.
What inspired you to even come up with this idea?
Oh, man. So when I came here from India, we moved to Manhattan, Kansas. And if you've ever been to Manhattan, Kansas in the early 90s, it was a one-lane road. So my dad actually got a scholarship to study at KSU there from India. So we immigrated with, you know, my whole family, my brother, my mom, and we went from Ahmedabad to Manhattan, and it was like nothing like I've ever experienced in my life. It was people that I didn't know. They spoke languages that I didn't understand, had customs. They looked completely different. And, you know, I was 6 and a half, 7. Like, it was a completely new world for me, and it was terrifying. And I have this vivid memory of going out of the apartment complex that we were in, and the kids sitting outside were playing Snakes and Ladders. I always mess this name up. Chutes and Ladders. Yes. It's called Chutes and Ladders here. I will get that right.
That's right.
But it's called Snakes and Ladders in India. So they were playing Snakes and Ladders, and I just sat down and started playing with them. And that's the beauty of kids and, like, innocence. There was no barriers. Like, we just started playing the game, and that's how I made friends. It's how I found a sense of community. And it's just something that stuck with me. I think I rediscovered board games in my late 20s, early 30s, but that childhood nostalgia of what board games were is something that stuck with me forever. And then when I rediscovered them, I'm like, this is the same thing I was playing when I was a kid. There's been no movement in this technology, yet it does the fundamental thing that we all love, which is bring people together.
What entrepreneurial traits or attitudes do you think you've had to own or embrace in your venture, in your ability to just leap forward?
Don't be afraid. You're always going to be afraid. So I say that with a caveat. I'm always terrified, but it's okay to be terrified. And I think it's okay to be nervous. And I think it's okay to ask those questions. And I think the worst thing as entrepreneurs we do for ourselves is think that fear and doubt is not okay. It is okay. It is a part of your bedrock. It is a part of who you are. Embrace it, own it, and move forward. That's the only way you can achieve these things.
Do you think those types of traits are innate, or can they be developed?
Both. I'm not one of those people who's just like, yep, I'm 100% confident, I can do this, let's go. It's something that I've had to develop. And I think shedding my insecurities was one of the biggest things, right? It's like shedding this thing of, I'm not capable, I can't do it. And finding out how to solve those problems for me was important, right? I'm not a technical person, I'm not an engineer, but finding those people who solve those gaps and then having confidence in them to be my partners and to kind of complete our team was a way to shed an insecurity. Understanding that no is okay was shedding an insecurity. I think that with every step, I'm constantly learning and shedding parts of my personality and growing into something else that I think is really vital to grow a business and to make it sustainable into a product. I mean, I work on that constantly, and I think it'll be an ever-evolving thing.
I so appreciate your fearless attitude. So I'm going to ask this question of...
Fearful attitude.
Fearful.
Pretending to be fearless.
Given your fearful attitude. Love the course correction. I think it's important. Given your fearful attitude you fully embrace,
yeah.
What wild action, moment, or event or person influenced you the most with this new venture?
When I had this idea, I went around to a bunch of meetups. So I was like, oh, I have this crazy idea. And I didn't even really know what I was building, right? I hadn't had my shtick right. I was like, oh, I'm building this device that merges the physical, digital, and social worlds of gaming. And everyone just kind of looked at me like, what? It took me a while to figure out what I wanted to do. That was a key. And then once I figured out what I wanted to build, the world's first board game console, And those same people that I was talking to at the meetups, I was like, okay, I figured out what I'm building. One guy who's actually now our advisor, Z Yang, he runs a game development studio in Boulder called Serenity Forge, and they do incredible things. He was like, you have to go talk to this guy, Rob Wyatt. He was a system architect of the Xbox. He built Magic Leap, Atari. Like, if he thinks you have something, you have something. And if you don't, you have shit.
Okay.
So I was like, okay. So I showed up at his lab with beer and we talked for 5 hours. And on the spot, he was like, I'm in, I love this. I'm your CTO. Let's build this. And it was just a conversation, like two people like exploring like this unknown tech, being like, is this solvable? Can we do this? And we came up with the craziest ideas how to solve it. And then it led us down this path of how to efficiently build a technology, scale it into a product that could hit the market at an affordable rate. So like all those things. But it took us a year to get to this point.
So you just showed up.
I just showed up. I shot him an email and I said, hey, I have this idea for a game console. Can you talk to me? And he was like, yeah, sure. Come to my lab. So I Googled him, found out that he liked beer, and I just brought some of Boulder's finest. And we just chatted, and that was it. It was just a conversation. I wasn't pitching him. I wasn't trying to sell him. And I don't think he was doing that either. One thing that I've really learned in this whole process is everyone's interests should align, whether it's a consumer, an investor, a partner, a founder, whatever that is, like your interests have to align. He is someone that is always looking to solve a problem in technology and push the limits of technology. And I was coming with a problem, so which desperately needed someone like him. It was like the universe speaking or whatever you want to call it, but it was taking initiative. It was taking the guts to talk to someone like that and be like, do I have something? Tell me if I don't. And that's what I mean by be fearful. Let that person say no.
I love that wild moment that you've shared with us. And WILD, which our organization stands for Women Inspiring Leadership Development, I want to ask you about leadership.
Yeah.
I really appreciate this fearful grit as an entrepreneur. Do you see leadership playing a role in pushing your new tech venture from idea to launch to even market growth?
Yeah, I think that's key in everything. So it's me, Tim, and Rob. There's three of us. We're three co-founders. And, you know, I consider myself the visionary, the person who has these grand ideas and like how to get to those grand ideas to align the right people to it. Rob is a builder. Like he's the creator of what we do. And then Tim is like the executioner. He executes our ideas, you know? And I think that in all three of us, we have this embedded sense of vision, like this idea of we know where we're going collectively and individually. And I think that in and of itself is leadership, is to understand your defined goals, what you are building, what your attributes are, and how to get to them. And you can figure it out. The road is windy. It has a lot of ups and downs. People will throw crap at it. It's about understanding your path. And that is most important. I think in the past year of doing this, and I mean, this can be attributed back to like my entire life, but finding your path is so important. And then not being afraid to completely wreck it and go in a different way.
What leadership attributes do you think best describe you?
Me? Oh my goodness.
You.
God, I feel like you have to ask my demon. They'll be like, bossy.
That's okay.
Yeah.
That's an okay word. In wild women, we're okay being bossy.
Yeah, exactly. What attributes? I don't know how to like word this properly, but I think that I'm really good at finding people who are really passionate and good about what they're doing and then letting them be. I do not micromanage. I think leadership is inspiring leaders and it's trust, right? So trust is a big thing for me in leadership, and allowing people to be their own leaders is another thing. Everyone has to do their part. And if you trust that person to do it, then they will. If you're constantly micromanaging and constantly trying to like get in everyone's business, especially if you don't understand it, it's a recipe for disaster. I think letting go of things that you don't have control over and trusting your team and the people that are around you is key. And inspiring. I think inspiration is a huge part of it too. I think that collectively, like I bother people with my Slack and I like send gifts and I don't know. It's just like to make it, we're a fun company and we're doing something that's so disruptive. And I hate that word because everybody says disruptive, but it's true. Like you're doing something that's so different, but it's to inspire the people that are coming along that ride with you to be like, trust me, we can do good things together, but it's a collective effort.
Did you ever have an oh shit moment or holy crap moment in this journey you can share with us and describe how you overcame that?
I think I have those every day. I do. I think that I'm like constantly like, oh shit, I had no idea. Oh my God. I think I just had them this morning. But I don't think there's one thing that completely sticks out like, oh my God, this is insane. I think with everything it is. I don't know how to word this properly, but I feel like I'm discovering so much about the startup journey. And in every single part of it, I have people who tell me shitty things, who doubt everything that we're doing, who question what we're doing. And it's totally fine and legitimate to do that. But in every moment, I'm like, oh shit, people are jerks. And then I have moments where I'm like, oh shit, people are amazing. You know, it's like, I don't know.
I appreciate the sense of that, oh crap, there isn't a moment. It's just this evolution of you never know when that's going to happen. And yeah. To sort of embrace that, because it could be an oh great or an oh no.
Yeah.
And it's not like one specific moment. It's sort of a part of your day in and day out. I appreciate the honesty of that, Shale.
I had a great meeting with a large studio that I'm not allowed to say the name of. And they were like, you know, on the spot, we're going to put our games on your platform. We love this. And I mean, it's going to be a huge partnership for us. And in that moment, this is last week, I was like, oh my God, people see the value in what we're building. They're willing to put not only money, but their content, their efforts into helping us build this platform and bring it to market. And then I have moments where it's like, people come up to me and they're like, your supply chain has to be fixed. Like your BOM costs are going to explode. And all these little things that happen along the way where you're just like, oh shit, am I going to get there? Am I going to get there? And with every day, it's just like peeling that layer off to be like, yes, I can do it. And pivoting and understanding and embracing that, I think is really important. If someone tells you, hey, this is too expensive, we need to find another component or another thing, to acknowledge that and find a solution. Don't be arrogant to be like, no, this is going to work. I think letting go of ego is a big thing in leadership too. Yes. It's like letting go of that ego, right? Like not being afraid of no, not being afraid of the negative comments, and just trying to move forward with every step.
Have you found any unique challenges of being a woman in tech, given the prevalence of the bro culture or disproportionate flow of venture capital for male-led ventures? Honestly, do you see any challenges or not?
You know, I didn't in the beginning. So when it was a concept and idea, and I was just talking to people, you know, the VCs here, the investors here, they're super friendly. Like people would just take meetings with me and have a conversation with me, and everyone was super supportive. Now, as things are getting more serious and we're getting more close to a marketing rollout and a pre-order campaign, and, you know, everything's kind of getting locked and ready, I don't think inherently, and maybe this is the wrong thing to say, but I inherently don't think people are bigots or sexist or racist. I don't think that's the society we live in today, right? I think what happens is the framing of a question and the framing of the response that you're looking for. So it's like very subtle things. If Tim or Rob are standing next to me, I will say the same thing and someone will respond, and then Tim will say the same thing and the response is completely different. And it's not that that person is a jerk and they hate me or they're being sexist. It's this framing of mentality and idea. It's just systematic, I feel. It's just like how you phrase a question, how you look for an answer is so embedded in who we are as people. And that takes time. And I think that's all it is. And that's where I've really noticed it, is I will literally say the same thing as my two co-founders, and the response is completely different for them than it is for me. And you know what? That's okay.
How do you address that? Just through patience?
When it first happened last year, I got super angry. Not at the person, but like internally, I was like, oh my God, I can't believe this person. I said the same thing you did. And they were like, oh, when you said it, it made sense. I was like, excuse me, what the hell? But yeah. Now I feel like you have to be a part of the system to change it. You can be on the outside complaining. That doesn't do anything for you. I'm a part of it. I'm in this. And if I do face that situation, I repeat myself. I have two amazing co-founders who are super supportive of me, who are like, oh, this is what she said. And like, just to kind of reiterate and like backtrack to like, I said this to you, it's the same thing. And I think people actually get it without being rude or snarky. And like, I don't even think sometimes people realize what they're doing. I'm guilty of that too, you know? I think I have biases and I frame questions sometimes, even towards women, where I'm like, wait, what am I doing? And I am a woman. Like, it's just this thing that we have inside of us. And I don't know why, you know, this idea of phrasing questions, do you have kids? Oh, how are you doing this with kids? Whereas I would never ask somebody else that who's a male, right? So it's like, it's just framing those questions and bringing it back to the point and to what that person is really trying to achieve. And I think we can all do better.
Last question for you,
yeah,
Shale, is the last game board. Where are you 5 years from now? What's your vision for that? Fast forward for us and describe what that looks like.
We go into market fall of 2020. That's board in the hands of consumers ready to play these games. We're already thinking about what this tech can do in version 2 and 3. And we're already kind of ahead in that. So ideally, I want to remain in control of this company as much as I can with a hardware tech gaming company. I think this is something that I'm always going to be a part of. And this is something that I'm very proud to lead. I'd love to see the game board in the hands of every single person who loves playing board games in the world. And I don't care if that's a crazy thing to put out there, but I'm going to put it out there to the universe. I think this is a fantastic piece of technology. And I think it does the fundamental thing that, you know, games did for me, which is connect. I don't think people want to live in virtual worlds with virtual people and virtual avatars only. I think that there's a whole society that we have to think about where the human connection is so important. And using technology to enhance that experience, not diminish it, is extremely vital. I'm not saying go to analog and ruin tech completely. There's a place for everything. And this is finding the bridge between both. And I'd love for people to see that vision and see the value in what we're developing.
Shale, I want to thank you for sharing your wild, authentic journey with us. We are grateful and we're so happy to have you on our show.
Thank you. I'm really excited to have participated.
That was the last game board co-founder and CEO Shale Mehta speaking with the Wild Council's Stephanie Brady as part of the Wild series of interviews recorded during Boulder Startup Week 2019. Learn more at lastgameboard.com and follow the company on Twitter at lastgameboard. The Wild at Boulder Startup Week podcast series is supported by First Bank, banking for good, to help business customers achieve their goals and provide them the resources to succeed. Learn more at efirstbank.com. The Boulder Tech Podcast is made possible in part by Boulder Startup Week Platinum sponsors Honey, Matter, and Zayo. We're also supported by Glider, a Colorado-based community movement and nonprofit that produces Boulder's Ignite and TEDx events, as well as Boulder Startup Week. Learn more and consider a donation at glider.com. Thanks to Dojo 4 for providing space for our podcast studio, and to KGNU Community Radio for recording gear and studio usage. Our intro music is by Echo Deck. Hear more at echodeck.com. That's ECCODEK. Our outro music is by Earthrise Sound System. You'll find them at earthrisesoundsystem.com. The Boulder Tech Podcast is produced by me, Joel Davis. Your feedback, criticisms, comments, and guest suggestions are welcome. Reach me at joel@dojo4.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here for the next episode of the Boulder Tech Podcast.